Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show.
Let's get it started in here.
And the bass keeps running, running, and 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 running, running,
and it's contact.
Parental guidance is suggested.
All right, all right, all right. Here we go with another show. Welcome to the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. I will be your host for the evening. I am Chris, a.k.a. Billy Bikerson. Jeremy is taking a little break tonight. I believe he is enjoying some much-needed downtime, and he's out there doing something that sounds like it's probably more fun than working. And unfortunately, Daryl... it seems that Daryl is being held hostage somewhere out in California, and I don't believe he has much of a signal wherever he is. Hopefully the California folks are treating him okay. And so what I have done tonight, I have brought one of our regular callers on board with me tonight to help me get through the show so I don't have to fly solo. And, of course, you guys all know him as Brian. Brian, how are you tonight?
Oh, you know, living the dream, one nightmare at a time. But I'm doing a hell of a lot better than Daryl. He's stuck in California. If he's being held hostage, do we need to organize a rescue party?
I don't know that you're that much better off. Didn't you say you're in New Jersey?
Yeah, oh, no, it's worse than that. Not only am I in New Jersey, I'm at the port in Newark, New Jersey.
Oh, you're in Newark and a port at that. Yeah, no. If you've never been to the port of Newark, folks, it's not a fun place to be. I'm just saying. It's, you know what? Back in the old days, it's what I would call a mother pluck and foster cluck.
This
is that
is
about
the place
describe
where
it
hope
there,
goes to die. Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like I said, this is the place that hope goes to die. So, you know.
yeah, you know, I can back that up. You know, it's speaking of hope dying, you know, Jerry Springer passed away today. Did you catch that news headline today, Brian?
I did not. I did not know that Jerry Springer died.
Yeah.
I wish I had some clever thing to say about that, but that seems a bit disrespectful, and nothing really pops to mind right now.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember
growing
up watching those shows.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of ironic that he would pass away, you know, at this time in the political realm, because I got to tell you, our news, our culture war, our political realm is really starting to resemble a Jerry Springer episode. What do you think? I mean, we've got, okay, this is crazy, okay? I mean, we've got basically transvestites that are on the war path and are like mob attacking people, carrying out gun attacks. You know, we've got all kinds of scandals going on. I mean, sex scandals, right? Because we're distracted by everything else. We still don't have the Epstein client list. I mean, everything's coming out. Everybody's shrugging it off. Like, I mean, literally, I mean, sex, drugs, money laundering, theft, bribery. I mean, it's all coming out in the open, and everybody's just kind of like, you know. I mean, it really does remind me of like a Springer episode. The only thing that we really need in that, I don't know, imagine if we were having one of these congressional hearings and the witness on the stand refused to answer the question being asked. I don't know if you've watched any of those hearings or not, where someone's asked a specific question and they just give some sort of nonsense press release, you know, statement that has nothing to do with a question that's being asked of them. Have you seen those hearings, the way that goes down?
Yeah, you mentioned the Jerry Springer thing and the notion of there seems to be more Jerry Springer episode, and it just occurred to me, sitting here thinking about it, if you look at the country, it seems like we have followed a progression of, I guess you call them daytime talk shows. You know, not too long ago, we were the Oprah show where everything was touchy-feely and how do you feel about this and make sure you respect everybody and blah, 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 this, that, and the other. Then we go to Dr. Phil, we're a dysfunctional family, but we're still kind of sort of trying to muddle through it. Now we're full-blown Jerry Springer. So I think you might be onto something there.
I guess
that turns into WWE wrestling.
Well, you know,
I mean,
like they'll have
exactly
somebody on the stage. You know, like Fauci or whatever, and they'll be like, you know, did you in fact know that, you know, that the lab leak theory was a plausible possibility when you made your statement on whatever, you know, April 30th, that it was not possible to have come from a lab? And they'll be like, Senator, the CDC takes infectious diseases very seriously and takes all available precautions to, you know, look out for the public's well-being. Okay, but did you know on that, like, you know, and that's how it goes. They'll ask a very specific question, and they'll get, like, this bullshit blanket answer. Actually, it's not even an answer. It's a blanket press release type statement that doesn't acknowledge the question at all. And you know what?
Yeah,
I just think it would be entertaining. I'm not condoning violence. I'm merely saying, well, let's pretend it's staged. I'm merely saying from an entertainment standpoint, it would be entertaining if one time, after about the third time, that someone like just refused to answer the question that's being asked, right? And they gave some bogus answer. I think it would be cool just to see. Imagine Ted Cruz just walking over, saying, excuse me a minute. Let me make myself a little bit more clear. And then he just, like, knocked the shit out of him and then asked the question again. I don't know. I think we're getting really close to that point. I remember years ago seeing, like, this huge fist fight brawl that broke out in the British Parliament. The guys was, like, back in the 90s, I think, possibly even the late 80s. Did you ever see any of that footage?
Yeah, yeah. The way the Parliament works over there is insane. But the answer that I actually love the most, other than the non-answer is I don't recall or I don't know. It's like, what are we paying you for? I mean, hell's bells, you can't remember your own name, it seems like. You know, I think we could probably who was it that said that they'd rather be governed by the first 500 names in the Boston phone book than Senate and Congress? Now, you talk about violence in our government. I want to remind people that it is in our history of senators beating the living hell out of each other on the floor. Senator Sumner got his ass kicked by Preston Brooks, Senator Preston Brooks. Not, well, it was a long while ago. You might remember it as back before, you know, 1850s, 1860s.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember that like it was yesterday.
Yeah, I remember reading the headlines, right?
Yeah, I think that was right after I you know, got my first horse.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, I mean,
Aaron
Burr?
Maybe we say again.
It was like, who was it? Was it Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton that actually had a pistol duel?
Oh yes, yes, yes. The sitting vice president shot and killed Alexander Hamilton. Oddly enough, it was in New Jersey. The duel took place in New Jersey, just across the river from New York City. So, yeah, maybe it's time we start bringing some. Maybe not shooting each other. I don't take me too far here, but just, you know, kind
right.
of that whole. If you don't know the answer to the question, maybe a smack upside the head might remind you. Oh yeah. I don't know about you, but that's the way that my mama raised me. If I didn't remember, she smacked me once, and all of a sudden I could remember. You know, it might work here. I don't know.
Yeah, everything prior to 7:30 on this show, folks, is just joking around. We don't get serious until 7:31, just to throw that out there. But speaking of some funny stuff, and we're going to get into this more in a little bit, but there are some pretty funny headlines out there floating around. The Babylon Bee, I think this one takes the cake. It's got a picture of Tucker Carlson, and it said, unemployed guy's basement selfie video crushes Fox News and primetime ratings.
Wait. That was on the Babylon Bee, you said?
That was the Babylon Bee, yeah. And
I thought that they didn't,
to be honest with you,
put out real news. I mean,
no,
I'm just saying,
Babylon
I didn't think
Bee
they put out real
satire.
News.
Well,
yeah, but I don't think
do
that's satire. I'm calling BS on that one.
Well, maybe they put that one across in a funny way, I guess would be a good way to say it. But you know what? I don't know. We can try. Should we try the headline game?
Yeah, I'm game for it. I mean, I beat you last time, right?
Yeah, you know, it's man, it's one of those weeks. The headlines aren't as the headlines are somewhat obvious this week. I'll put it this way. But let's go for it anyway. Are you ready?
Bring it on.
All right. So Chicago mayor warns that if local Walmart locations close, people will have fewer places to shoplift. Is that real or is that satire?
I think that's satire because you said shoplift. But I could actually believe that'd be a real one. So I'm going with satire, though.
It is, in fact, satire. But you know what? It is sadly extremely close to something that might be said seriously. In all honesty,
yeah. Well,
yeah,
I mean, she already came out not too long ago with the riots and basically said, well, it'd be nice if they would, enjoy the parks peacefully, but they have a right to be out here too. I didn't know that burning a police car was part of my constitutional rights. I guess I got to go read through that again.
But, well, I think it depends on who you are and why you're burning it.
Well, that might could be. I don't know.
All right. Well, let's try another one. Florida Pride Parade canceled after DeSantis tells participants they have to keep their clothes on in front of children.
I think that's real.
You're going with real?
I'm going with real. I think that one's real.
All right. I finally got you. That one
oh,
is
that was
also,
satire?
That is also satire. Oh, let's see here. You know, I'm trying to find. So here we go. Let's go. All right. I'll probably mess her name up, but Corinne Jean-Pierre, one of the White House press secretary, says it's entirely normal for Joe Biden to have a note card with reporters' question written on it.
Yeah, I think that's real, but I can believe it's satire as well. I'll go with real on that one.
Okay. All right. So it's 2-1 because, yeah, that one actually is a real one.
I absolutely love how they keep covering for Joe Biden left, right, and center. what has become normal for the president is just insane anymore.
I know.
At this stage in the game,
all right. I'll throw another one out there. Buttigieg calls on DOT to address inequity by using more gay crash test dummies.
Uh, I could believe that Pete Buttigieg said that. So I'll go with real.
That one is satire. What are we at, 22?
Well, 2-2.
All right.
Well, I mean, that'd be the most useful thing he's ever done in that position.
Oh, come on. You talking about Bus Stop Pete?
Yeah, Pete Buttigieg.
All right. How about this one? AOC, the government must shut down unapproved news agencies to defeat fascism.
All right, that one's hard because I want to say that's real because, I mean, I think of the dumbest thing possible and then think of something that could even be dumber than that, and that's about the level of intelligence I think that AOC has. So, yeah, I'm going to go with real. That one's real.
That one is also satire, but sadly, very, very close. Man, did I just strike you out?
Yeah, you got me.
I think I struck you out. That's nice.
2-3. Hey, there you go. You redeemed yourself. There you go, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
there's some pretty good other pretty good headlines as well here. Nikki Haley tells Emperor Palpatine South Carolina is an ideal place to build a Death Star. Millions of boomers call grandkids to ask how to change the channel from Fox News.
Yeah, that one might actually be a real one here pretty soon. You know, here's something I kind of think would be fun. Lewis Black made a joke some years back about our politics. And he was talking about the way that we could scare the living hell out of our enemies, rivals, however you want to call them that, you know, like Russia and so on and so forth. He says what we do is we reelect Ronald Reagan. Like, he's dead, sure, but we reelect him anyway and act like he is alive and the president. It will scare the living hell out of everybody and will make them think twice before they really screw with us. Here's the thing about that. It's a worse option than what we currently have. So I'm wondering, could we actually get a petition to reelect Ronald Reagan? Because the Constitution says you can only have 2 terms in the lifetime. Say anything about afterlife.
You know, we had an election in Chicago. This was years ago when I was still living in Chicago. And there was a, I believe it was the county commissioner, Stroger. And, oh gosh, what was his name? Ralph Stroger? I think it was Ralph Stroger. And he was a long time Chicago politician, you know, corrupt and the whole works. And right before it was time for reelection, he got really, really, he was in very, very bad health. He was in the hospital. And they, of course, said, no, he's still alive. He's still alive. And the rumors that were getting out was that he was pretty much on his deathbed. And so they said that he was still alive on election day. Okay. And as usual, you know, he won the election by a landslide. Now, the day after the election, they announced that he had passed away, but that before he passed away, he had appointed his son, Todd Stroger, to take his office. And everybody was like, yeah, that dude was dead before the election. And of course it was, you know, the usual scandals were being talked about, all the voter rolls with all the dead people. And I just remember thinking, you know, because I was relatively new to Chicago at that time. I was like, ain't this some shit? Dead people just elected a dead guy. Like, that really happens in Chicago. So when you talk about, you know, maybe reelecting someone who has passed away, I'm just saying it's been done before.
Hey, maybe this is just breaking news on this radio station. You know, we need to elect Ronald Reagan for his first post-life term. I don't know if we can get the ball rolling on this, but let's see if we can do that.
Well, here's, you know, in other news that's not getting much coverage, have you heard that Robert Kennedy Jr. is filing to run for president in 24, and he's filing to run as a Democrat?
Yeah, I saw that. He's going to run. He's going to challenge Joe Biden. And the sad part is, the way that the politics works out, I think he's going to get the nomination. Commission, and there's a D next to his name, therefore it can't be that bad. Not to mention, you know, some of these people that probably shouldn't be voting anymore because they, you know, don't know their own names are going to vote for him because they think they're voting for John F. Kennedy. He's going to have that. Sorry about that. My headset just died. But they're going to have that weird flashback to the 1960s and think they're voting for him.
You know, let's just hope he stays away from airplanes and convertibles for the remainder of the election cycle.
Yeah, airplanes, convertibles, and kitchens. Let's not forget the kitchens.
Right. So, oh, crazy stuff. So, moving on to some other news here. You know, I'm going to get into let's talk about the elephant in the room. Apparently, it is the season for firing extremely successful cable news talk show host. Obviously, Tucker, Dan Bongino, rumored that Judge Jeanine Pirro may be on the chopping block next over at Fox Heiser Bush. Let's see. Of course, over on CNN, a once successful talk show host, Don Lemon, or Don Lemon, however you say his name. I'm not exactly sure what the proper pronunciation is. So, yeah, big shakeup in the news, but especially over there on the Fox side. And of course, there's all sorts of rumors flying around about why Fox gave Tucker Carlson the axe, which was literally, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the biggest cable news talk show on cable TV. So what was his audience was like 3.9 million, you know, viewers or something like that, which far exceeds even second place. So I've heard some pretty crazy ones. You know, so I know recently he went and supposedly had dinner with Rupert Murdoch and his wife. And supposedly Rupert's wife is like a big, huge fan of Tucker. And I don't know. The rumor is that she was just a little bit too happy about the meeting with Tucker, and that Rupert felt the need to go ahead and get rid of him just because maybe a jealousy thing. I've heard all kinds of stuff. I've heard it stems from, of course, the lawsuit with Dominion that they paid a huge settlement on. There's another lawsuit forthcoming that they're probably going to pay a settlement out on. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure why they would axe Tucker. Because it's not like they're going to save themselves any money. It's not like the lawsuit is going to stop because they're like, oh, Tucker quit. Okay, we'll drop the lawsuit. We don't need millions of dollars from you. So it's kind of like it's like a double loss. Like they're going to take a huge loss in the lawsuit, And then they're also going to take a huge loss in the ratings and the viewership because, yeah, I mean, from what I understand, a lot of the Fox News followers are dumping that network, you know, as fast as the welders are dropping Bud Light out there. I had to throw that welder joke in because I do have one of my kids that's a welder. But, yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Brian?
Well, I mean, okay, so you look at it like that. You know, Tucker Carlson was the most popular news anchor on legacy media. The only people that were getting more views than him were, you know, are guys that are on FaceTube and such like that. So, yeah, I know I'm old and whatever. But so he's the number one host of all legacy media. And he is the number one target for places like Media Matters. It seems odd to me that Fox News, the Fox Corporation, cuts their golden goose loose. And I can't help but wonder if that other lawsuit might somehow just disappear. Or sudden, we don't want that much from you anymore. Or they settle for an undisclosed amount of money. Now, I'm waiting to hear that one. You know, they settled for an undisclosed amount of money or something like that. Now, I just did a quick look. Carlson's views were up past 3 million a night. And Fox lost $800 million in value after Tucker Carlson's departure. Just think about that for just a second. You just shelled out like what $700-800 million on a lawsuit. You fire the guy, and then the value of your company drops another $800 million. I mean, I'm not saying this is a conspiracy or anything, but this kind of plays perfect into what Media Matters is hoping for. They want to get rid of Tucker Carlson, make sure he shuts up, and get rid of Fox News entirely.
Now, Brian, we don't talk about conspiracy theories on this show. We only talk about conspiracy facts.
Excuse me, I meant conspiracy spoiler alerts. But
okay,
I mean,
hey,
I want to
throw this out real quick. Hold on, I want to throw this out real quick since we've kind of got into our interactive segment of the show here. For those of you that are listening in, if you'd like to come on the air and ask a question or drop a comment, the number to call is 516-387-1733. And I'm going to give you that number one more time. It's 516-387-1733. And if you have something to say, because we do have people that show up on the switchboard that just call in and listen over their phone. If you actually want to come on the air and say something, go to your dial pad once you can hear the radio show over your phone and hit the number one. When you hit the number one, that literally, I'm not even making this up, it literally puts a icon next to your phone number that shows a hand raised, letting us know that you want to say something. And I do see that we have a caller that wants to say something. So I'm going to go ahead, if your phone number ends in 7777, I'm going to go ahead and bring you on the air now. All right. And are you there, caller?
Yeah. How you doing, brother? This is Chris up here in Duluth, Minnesota. And I wanted to chime in on your guys' little conversation there.
Okay. All right.
So you guys were talking about him making $700 million or whatever Tucker Carlson's worth to Fox News. Is
right.
that what he just said? Somewhere in
yeah,
that area. So
somewhere in yeah, there. Yeah.
The problem is they
lost $800 million in valuation after they announced that he was fired. Not after they paid the money out. After they announced he's fired, all of a sudden they lose $800 million extra.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
let's call it a billion just to make it easy. And so you got Tucker Carlson, who's just getting on the air. He's been, especially lately, he's been talking about all the theories that are not theories, because we all know that they didn't change it from conspiracy theories to just government conspiracies. But, you know, so he's been talking a lot about the about all of them that have been proven debunked and proven to be false and are true, depending on which way it goes. And so $1 billion that he's worth in his valuation. The problem is that you have all these liberal F-tards, excuse my language, that are worth, you got a few people up there. I mean, Elon Musk is, he's all right. I mean, but you got all the other ones, Soros and these other billionaires, who any one of them can give every man, woman, and child $1 billion with a B in the whole entire world and still have more money than they'll ever know what to do with. I mean, you look at what Soros is worth, is like $60 billion or something like that. There's 8.5 billion people in the country or in the world. So they can buy out Tucker Carlson without any problem if that fits their agenda.
Well, okay. Well, now doing the math on that, though, if let's just round it out and say there's 8 billion people in the world. If someone had $8 billion, they could give each person in the world a dollar. If they had $80 billion, they could give each person in the world 10 bucks. All right, so that would be at 800 billion, they could give each person 100 bucks. But, I mean, the point being, yeah, we have some people out there that are multi-hundred billionaires that are definitely well off and can certainly make a very, very huge financial impact for the good. Although, one thing I do remind people, when we talk about someone's net worth, that does not mean that is money that they have in the bank. That includes the value of their assets. That's the value of the businesses that they own. But, of course, those assets have that value. They would have to basically sell off those assets to liquidate the cash. It doesn't necessarily mean they have that kind of money in the bank. And, of course, if they sold off their assets, then someone else would be making the profit off of that, those assets. But I get what you're saying. But
I guess
my math
was a little bit off there.
What's that?
My math was definitely a little bit off.
But to your point, though, what's a $1 billion loss on one show if, let's say, somebody like Pfizer threatens to stop running ads on your network because the amount of money, I don't know the hard number that Fox News as one channel or one conglomeration of channels, I don't know the hard number of how many advertising dollars they get from the pharmaceutical companies, but I do believe, okay, folks, I am broadcasting from my house. There's a couple of Harleys pulling up in my driveway, and my dog's going nuts. I'm guessing that my wife must be home from riding with one of my brothers and his girlfriend. Brian, if you want to take over for just a second, I'm going to mute my phone so that people don't have to listen to my dog.
I was just doing the quick math here, and I was looking it up. And George Soros is estimated to be valued at $6.7 billion. Rupert Murdoch, on the other hand, the guy who everybody, you know, says owns Fox News, is reported to own $17.3 billion. Now, I get your point about this notion that people can be bought and sold, but one of the things you always have to ask is it true that Tucker Carlson, now please understand, I'm not going to defend the guy like, you know, I'm a enormous fan of his or anything, but is he somebody who can be bought or sold? Because, you know, there are some people that there is no amount of money that will ever get them to shut up or get them to say something they don't believe is true. You tracking where I'm going with that?
I think that everybody in the media, as far as those the reporters go, I wouldn't put it past any of them to, I mean, once you get to that dollar amount to the high enough, anybody's going to say, whatever it is that they need to say, I think. But for the most part, I mean, Tucker Carlson's salary is an astronomical amount. I mean, he's got more money than he'll ever know what to do with. But one thing that I've seen with the rich is that they always want to be, you know, they always want more. So I would like to say that he's not, and then it's that he's. I think that he left because he didn't want to follow their rules, and that's why he's going to end up on Newsmax or on, you know, Sirius Satellite with his own program, something like Howard Stern did, or where he's going to be doing his own independent thing and making all that money. And he's going to have a huge following. Tucker Carlson was the best show on Fox, and Fox was definitely the best program as far as mainstream news. Now they got, I mean, they have a few people that are not bad, but even their dialogue has gone. It's even bending a little bit more towards the left on a weekly, monthly basis. I mean, somebody who's in power, and as far as like the billionaire goes, we're talking about, like, that's just one person I was speaking about. But you got things like the DNC and all these when they pull together these big donors, they pull together their money. It's just a fraction for them to, I mean, because the hit that they were taking from Tucker Carlson and anybody talking negative on them is not even, it's so well paid for if they can shut them up. And it's only a fraction of what they're worth as a whole if they pull their money and their resources together.
Investment. They have an enormous amount of money, and they control a lot of money and you know, that notion that everybody thinks, you know, money has power, well, it kind of does, not always. I mean, you know, you have some strange people that, you know, money only gets them so far. I mean, you know, the common man, you know, we seem to think that, hey, you know, if I won the lotto, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is there are some people on this planet that, you know, it's like, I don't care if you give me $1 billion, I wouldn't know what to do with it anyway, so it doesn't matter. Now, once again, please understand, I'm not saying that's Tucker Carlson. I'm not trying to stand up for the guy. Honestly, I think what's going on is a lot more like what happened with Glenn Beck when he left Fox News. I don't know if you remember how all that went down. I mean, that was quite a while ago. But, you know, he talked about that notion that what they basically tried to do is they tried to shoehorn him into something that he couldn't do, and it was unworkable. And so he quit. He's like, no, I'm not doing it. And he went off and started an internet company that everybody thought was an idiot of an idea. Like, there's no way this is going to work. And you know, Glenn Beck is still somebody that everybody tunes into, or a lot of people still tune into. And he has his whole network, which I find ironic because it started on the internet. And I don't know if you still can, but, you know, there were some wasn't too long ago you could actually get his network on satellite. I don't know if you still can. I don't watch TV. So, but I mean, I get the argument you're making, you know, and I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm fully expecting to read something about, you know, this other lawsuit was settled with an undisclosed agreement, whatever that may be. So it very well could be that they came out and said Tucker Carlson has to apologize or something like that, and he may have said no. I don't know. And I think that's the problem, is none of us really do know what's going on. It's just, it's like what I said, you know, when you look at the evidence and everything that's going on, it leads your mind to think one thing. It may or may not be true, mind you, but it doesn't look very good for us. I'm not old enough to have experienced it, but, you know, everybody goes back to, like, Walter Cronkite and this notion that, you know, back then, you know, journalists were straight down the middle. Walter Cronkite was never straight down the middle. He was a leftist from the very beginning, and it was Walter Cronkite who basically convinced the president that Vietnam War was over and there was nothing he was going to be able to do about it. So we've had that problem in this country forever, really. So I don't know a good way to fix it, but can tell you one of the ways.
But definitely not to this degree where you have one, I mean, just both extremes. You have news channels that are, you pretty much know, if you watch CNN, that's going to be completely liberal to the left. Fox is more to the, used to be all to the right. It kind of blurred their lines a little bit. Even Newsmax, you're going to know that it's far right. There's not just blind, just facts, just the facts, you know. They report it, whether it's, it doesn't matter whether it's good, bad, ugly. It's the news. They have to have facts to back it up that are proven. And then, but now they just throw out whatever bullshit that they want, whatever crap that they want, and they call it news. And it's really misleading. It's tearing up the country. That's how, look at the who's in office right now because of that.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of hope, if you will. A lot of people, especially those that are older than me, please understand, I'm not all that old. At least I don't think I am until, you know, I have somebody start pointing out that I'm turning gray. But, you know, they always will throw that's why I brought up the Walter Cronkite. As you know, back in my day, our news anchors were straight down the middle, like Walter Cronkite. Well, he was never straight down the middle. Or they'll throw that notion out, like, well, you know, it's never been this bad before. You know, I don't know if you you were listening at the beginning of the show, but I mentioned that the political violence in our own country is not unheard of. I mean, we had two senators beating the hell out of each other on the floor 100 and some odd years ago. Well, the same is true when it comes to media. John Adams and you got to forgive me, I'm pulling this stuff off the top of my head, not out of my ass, just out of the top off the top of my head. It was a campaign between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson had people writing in newspapers, like editors, writing that John Adams was a hermaphrodite. He lacked the firmness of a man and the sensibilities of a woman. They actually called him a hermaphrodite. So just think about that for a second now. That's what they were doing 200 years ago.
Was Anheuser Bush around then?
No, they came. They came a little later.
I was just wondering if they gave him his own damn.
I think Yingling was around though. I might be wrong on that one. But I mean, the point being though is this notion of political bias in journalism. We've had it forever, and it's been worse at times. It's never been constantly in your face. And I think that's the difference. You got your newspaper once a day. Now people turn on Fox News and just watch it all day long. Or CNN. Okay, I don't know anybody who actually watches CNN.
Or to take that a step further.
They had to work for it at least. You know, they had to put in some effort to get their opinion out there and try to swing an election, you know, by writing letters. And, you know, everybody didn't have a phone and the internet and everything else back then. So at least they had to put in some work. Everybody now, it takes 2 seconds and you got everybody who doesn't know shit about the country. They think the Declaration of Independence is a divorce. And they're like, I don't vote and everything else because my vote doesn't matter. And then they get on there and they want to chime in. And that's crap. But anyway, I love you guys' show. Thank you guys. And you guys have a good night.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Chris.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Just keep your head up. Like I said, it's been bad before. I just don't know how we keep it from getting worse.
You know what I think the difference is? I don't think we've ever had AI-generated algorithms driving the division in the past. And we've never had the type of instant access media in the past like we do now, where people literally walk around with a pocket size. You know, people used to walk around with one newspaper for the day. Now people are walking around with a pocket-sized library at their disposal. It's just feeding them headline notifications all day long. every day, all day, every day. They take a break. They go to Facebook. They go to TikTok. They go to YouTube. They go to the Gateway Pundit. They go to MSNBC or whatever for their news. It's just constant. It's nonstop, you know, and it hasn't been, historically speaking, all that long that we've had such a thing as a 24/7 news cycle with the advent of cable news. And so, you know, that goes back to what, the 1980s? I mean, you're literally talking
about it.
Yeah. I mean, we're literally only one generation in. But even in the 1980s when that started, most people didn't have cable TV. It was expensive. Only the, you know, upper middle class and wealthy families had cable TV. You didn't start getting widespread cable television access into every American household until sometime in the, you know, roughly mid-90s, to where everybody had it, maybe even late 90s. A lot of people were just, you know, beginning to shell out the money for cable TV and internet then, you know, in the early 2000s. And, I mean, the internet that we have today is not the same internet we had in 1997. You know, you didn't have – the internet wasn't just sitting there feeding you a bunch of headlines and news stories and, you know, the latest tweet out from somebody. You know, we didn't even have real social media back then. You know, we had the old bulletin boards. You know, I don't know if you remember those or not, the old BBS, the bulletin board system. You know, we had some chat rooms and stuff out there. But those were, I mean, there was a bunch of them. They weren't connected to each other. They were random people. It was kind of a cult event. Most people weren't in chat rooms. Most people were still, you know, either going and hanging out at the bars with their coworkers or friends after work, you know, to have their social interactions, what have you. So the internet that we have today, you know, I mean, even Facebook, think about Facebook in its beginnings. You basically, your news feed was just kind of in sequential order. If I had 30 friends on Facebook, my news feed would basically be whatever those 30 friends posted that day or that week in like chronological order of when they posted something, right? That's what I would see in my news feed. But today, now we've got all these algorithms, these software algorithms that are going in, and basically they're figuring out what makes us tick, what makes us mad, what makes us sad, what really gets our interest, right? And they're literally, these algorithms are psychoanalyzing all the users, and they are modifying that news feed now to make you see the things that they think you're going to react to first, because they want that interaction. It's that clickbait. The more they can keep you sucked in, they want to keep showing you the next thing that's going to get you to interact. And so now we have these echo chambers where the only thing that really gets fed to us is our point of view. Or if it's another point of view that runs contrary to ours, it's going to be something that's extreme and ridiculous that they know will provoke a response from us. So, yeah, we've basically gone to this format that drives us absolutely insane. It drives the division. It makes us angrier and angrier at people from the other side. And it's doing that to everybody. So that's the one aspect. Even though it's been bad before, that's the aspect that we've never had in the past, is that we've literally got the most powerful computing systems out there literally hammering out a sequence of commands that are designed to keep us angry and on the edge.
Yeah, I think you're onto something with that. Now, I looked it up because, you know, curiosity is what it is, because I know that Fox News is pretty much everybody will go back to the founding of Fox News being the beginning of partisan politics, which, like I said before, is absolutely ridiculous. Fox News was founded on October 7th, 1996. Now, to kind of lean into what you're talking about with what the Internet used to be and what it was, the first time I realized the Internet was useful was in college. And it wasn't like chat rooms and things like that. I had an old 22 rifle, and I took it apart to clean it, and I did something, and the inner workings just kind of exploded on me. I mean, they didn't actually explode. The tensioner came out, and all the pieces just fell all over the place. And I struggled for about 2 or 3 days to get this thing back together, and I had no luck. Well, I ran into a college professor. Now, this ought to tell you how much our society has changed in just 20 years. I went to a college professor, and I was talking to him about it, and we started talking about rifles and such like that, and I brought up the fact that I had this issue where my rifle is useless. It just fell apart. And he told me to go to this website because he's sure that somebody there could help me. Okay, well, the Internet's what those weird people use, you know, the guys that are over there, you know, with math and pocket protectors and whatnot. So, but anyway, I followed his advice. I mean, what do I have to lose? And sure enough, somebody had the same problem, and they helped me put the rifle back together. Well, the message boards helped me put the rifle back together. That's when I realized, hey, maybe this Internet thing actually is kind of useful. But today, I wake up in the morning, and of course, I do the same thing everybody else does. I use my phone as an alarm clock. I use my phone for almost everything. And my alarm goes off, I pick it up, I shut it off, and the very first thing I see is headlines. It's like, dear Lord, baby Jesus, I haven't even had a cup of coffee, and you're already shoving headlines at me. At least let me wake up before I have to even begin processing what's going on. So yeah, I think you're right. It's that 24-hour news cycle because, you know, everybody's got to be enraged about something all the time. And then it's the algorithms to make sure that you see what's going to piss you off or what's going to make you decide that the other side is just absolutely evil and horrible and hateful. Now, those that are listening, if you really, really want to screw with the algorithms, you could do what I do and engage with everything. So anybody who looks at my Facebook feed would probably be absolutely and utterly lost into what I believe politically, because I get things from socialists posting about stuff and things from what people consider right-wing groups and so on and so forth, and I absolutely love it. And it's a ton of fun. You can read the same exact story from two separate opposing views, and it's night and day. I mean, it's just truly night and day. You know, the nice young man helped the old lady across the street versus the young man beat the living hell out of this woman and forced her to run into traffic. And it's the same damn story. They're talking about the same event. It's absolutely amazing what you can see when you trick the algorithm, if you will, so you can see both sides. Give it a shot. It's kind of fun. But do you actually remember, though, when you had cable in your house? I do believe we've lost Chris, or perhaps I have been dropped out. Stand by, please. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not quite sure what to do because I'm not sure that we are still live, nor am I sure that you can hear me. I do not have access to the switchboard. I'm trying to get in contact with Chris. So if there's anybody out there that wants to...
Hi. Okay. I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I have you now. I don't know what happened
okay.
there.
I am sorry. I did start a new job this week. Obviously, my new boss is unaware that I have a radio show. Normally, he says one sentence and then bye. But apparently tonight he was just as talkative as could be and even felt the need to explain to me how to make a left turn out of a truck stop.
Well, hopefully our audience doesn't think I'm completely nuts and out of my mind. I mean, I am, but there's that problem. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. It is one of those nights, folks. So, yeah. Got through that conversation. Okay, now where were we here in our conversation? I know we were talking about the news, and I have in my notes here also to bring up the BRICS nations and the U.S. dollar, which is still a very, very big threat that's going forward. And would you like to elaborate a little bit? Let's talk about the fact that, you know, the U.S. dollar was once backed by gold, right? Called the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
Basically,
right.
All the money that was printed was more or less like a share of gold that we had in inventory, right? And so we had to base our paper currency off of our gold reserves, which gave it solid backing. Now, we're no longer on the gold standard. And essentially what has been giving the U.S. dollar all of its power, it's often referred to as the petrol dollar, has been the fact that the U.S. dollar has been used as the global reserve currency, and it is the standard currency that is used when buying, purchasing, selling, trading oil, right? Hence the name of the petrodollar. And now we have the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, also being joined by nations like Saudi Arabia and Turkey, trying to come up with a new reserve currency for petrol trading. At least amongst the BRICS nations, which represent a very significant percentage of the global supply chain, I'll say. And they're talking about making their own reserve currency that essentially half the world, or nearly half, something like 40%, would then switch to that currency as its trading mechanism for the petroleum markets. If that happens, we're not backed by gold. We no longer have that position as the dominant world reserve currency, right, for trading petroleum. Go ahead, Brian. Explain to people what kind of impact that would have on our markets, on everything.
Well, before I do that, I want to give just a brief little monetary history here for those that are unsure what we're talking about when you talk about gold standard and so on and so forth. So I'm going to drag everything way, 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 way back. So when we started as a country, you're right, what we did is we had these banknotes, and it was each individual state and each individual bank that issued a note. And it would be like a $1 worth of gold. It was an IOU. You'd take this piece of paper, go to the bank, you'd hand it to them, and they would give you gold. And that's the way it was. Well, about the Civil War, there was a lot of counterfeiting going on. So the Union, the federal government decided to federalize this system so that there was, it became harder for people to actually counterfeit this money. And they went from where you had banknotes to where you had federal notes. But they're still worth gold. You got to keep this in mind. It's worth gold. And if you think about it, it makes a lot more sense to carry a wad of, $1 bills or $20 bills or whatever, then whatever that money would be worth in gold. Gold is heavy. So it worked just fine up until right about 1900. And anybody who knows their history might know this name of William Jennings Bryan. And he gave one of the most famous political speeches in the country for somebody who was not a founding father or a president. And the name of the speech was Crucified on a Cross of Gold. And he was complaining because the gold standard was ruining things for him, he said. Because when the value of gold was really, really high, the value of the dollar was really, really high. And it was difficult for farmers, he said, to do business. So he lobbied to have the gold standard changed to a gold. Well, it didn't take too much longer, but we actually did that. We actually were on a gold and silver standard. We call it a bimetal standard. Then a little bit further along, we have the Federal Reserve. Remember, everything is still backed by gold. Everything is still backed by gold. And then a little bit later, we have the Great Depression. One of the big problems with the Great Depression were the banks weren't getting the gold. So FDR decided to make it illegal to own gold bullion and then gold coins. So while the dollar is still technically worth gold, you can't get it. And then all of a sudden, that dollar started to become worth less in comparison to gold until eventually you get to dollar's value in relation to gold just absolutely plummets. Anybody who's my age can remember their grandparents talking about they used to go and buy a gold necklace for like $15. And just think about that for a second. You know, like your gold necklace for $15 is like gold plated? No. It was gold, through and through gold. In fact, here it is. You can take a look at it. Could you imagine buying a necklace today that's pure gold, you know, 14 or 24 karat, you take your pick on that one, for less than $1,000? I mean, it's insane.
Yeah. In the 1980s, I had a solid gold necklace, and it was like $30.
Yeah. So what's going to happen if we lose the if you will, the petrodollar status, is we're going to have that rampant inflation again. When we cut the value of the dollar away from gold, dollar's value disappeared overnight. And the funny part about it is gold is still technically worth exactly what it was then. So, like, if you had a $20 gold piece in 1900, you could go in and buy a really, really, really nice suit. Like, think designer. I'm not into fashion, so forgive me. But, you know, like, you know, the Italian suits and so on and so forth, you know, the things that I'll never wear because they're too damn expensive, and what's the point? It would cost the same amount then as it does now in gold to buy the same suit. But dollar-wise, it cost $20 then. They cost what? $4,000, $5,000, $6,000.
So
the value itself has not changed. It's just the way that we look at the value. And when that happens, our dollar is going to, like I said, it's going to plummet. And all of a sudden, that candy bar that you remember buying for 50 cents that now costs $2 is now going to cost $10. And we're going to have Ramblin' Joe Biden, if it happens under his term, standing up there and telling us that inflation is imaginary. No, it's not transgender. That doesn't make any sense. So we're going to have to deal with that stuff. Now, I'll be honest with you. I'm a little bit more hopeful about this. I've been following the BRICS thing for a little while. It's an old scheme. I don't think they're going to get any traction with it, at least not yet. I think it's going to take something really, really massive to cause that to happen. Because right now, despite what everything's going on with the petrodollar, the truth be told, our dollar's value is not held up necessarily by oil. What it's held up by is the men and women that carry rifles in our armed services, basically saying, this is what it's worth, and we will enforce it's worth this. So right now, it's kind of more or less, if we say it's worth this, so that's what it's worth. But if we get away from using it with petroleum products and so on and so forth like that, then other countries are going to be basically be able to tell us what they think our dollar's worth. And that's where we're going to get into some trouble, which I think it'd be kind of.
Well, fun. Okay. So here's the scary part. We have militaries around the world that are training, drilling, are actually out there in combat situations here and there, whose focus is 100% on war fighting. Meanwhile, over here, we are having transgender tolerance training for our military. We are making all kinds of things a priority over war fighting capabilities. We've, even though I remember experiencing some of this ideology amongst some of the military people, the belief that our economy was so strong and our technology, our defense technology, so advanced, more or less that we didn't even really need to be all that focused on, you know, creating the biggest bunch of badasses on the planet anymore, because we have the technology, we have the economy to afford the technology, that more or less we can just dominate. But those technologies are finding their ways into the hands of our enemies, namely China. We're starting to see our economy fall while other economies strengthen. And all of a sudden, the playing field is getting balanced out on this whole my economy versus your economy, my technology versus your technology, right? And now it becomes, any war, ultimately, you can have all the technology you want, but somewhere in there, you have to have an occupying force. And that occupying force has to be top-notch at what it does. We've gotten away from really, really driving that point home in our military priorities. And so now you take the armies of China and Russia, right? Throw in somebody like Iran, Turkey, Brazil, South Africa as a small contributor. If those militaries unite against us, and here's another truly scary part is, you know, there's even talk about Mexico aligning with the BRICS nations, which gives a foothold right there at our southern border, Bozo the Clown could infiltrate our southern border at this point. So now we've got a formidable, group of enemies starting to collaborate together, work together, and are starting to realize that, hey, you know, individually, we may not be able to outdo the U.S. economy. However, if we pull our economies together, if we band together to create our own economic system to compete against the U.S. dollar, they don't have to destroy it. But we're already seeing crazy inflation. We're already seeing massive economic damage from that inflation. And that, even though some things are a lot more than, you know, 9%, we're seeing that damage at 9%. What do you think the inflation would look like if they were able to band together, do this, and basically just do another 20% devaluation of the U.S. dollar? Well, now we're getting to what, 30% inflation?
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I see your point, but there are two things here, okay? So, number one, if you look at everything – take all the actors that are our adversaries, if you will, our rivals, however you want to phrase that. I don't really want to call them enemies because that implies we want to shoot them in the face, though that might be coming later. And look at who's driving all of it. Now, everybody wants to point to Russia, big bad Russia. Look at Russia, Russia, Russia. But it's not Russia. It's legitimately not Russia. It's China. And right now, the United States can completely and utterly destroy China with one press statement. We don't even have to lift a finger. All we have to do is say one sentence, and China's done. And if China's done, they are complete. Their collapse will cause the collapse of all of the other rivals. Now, keep in mind, it will also collapse many of our allies, so we really don't want to do that too much. All we have to say is, China, we're not paying the debt back. What are you going to do about it? And they're done. Completely and utterly destroyed. Keep in mind, it means that our living standards goes down significantly as well, but not as bad as China and Russia and all the other places. So there's that to consider. And is normally I'm the pessimistic. There you go. I'm normally the pessimistic one when it comes to a lot of this stuff and militaries. Or rather, government's response to everything. But there was a story that you were talking about all this, and it made me think about this. The F-4 Phantom, it was a fighter jet that we used during the Vietnam. There was something that was funny that was going on with this. Now, you were talking about the notion of technology, that we assume that our technology is best and so on and so forth. And the Army and the Marines and so on and so forth, if you've ever talked to a service member, they are really cocky about it. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just, you know, we have the phrase, we own the night, and we believe it. So yeah, we kind of think big of ourselves. So when the F-4 Phantom came out, they did not put a cannon on it. They did not put guns on it. There was no ballistic weaponry on this whatsoever. It was just rockets. And when they asked McDonnell Douglas about this, they said, well, what do you need a gun for? We have rockets. Our technology has advanced beyond the necessity of a gun, of a cannon. We don't need them. Well, fast forward to Vietnam, and all of a sudden the F-4 Phantoms kept getting shot out of the sky at close quarters. And they scrambled, figure out why it was that our great technology was not working, because it's so much better than what they have. They realized they needed to put the cannon back into it. So they redesigned it and reintroduced the cannon to the F-4. And then all of a sudden, instead of taking extremely heavy losses, we started putting out heavy losses. So the point being is, yeah, we get things wrong a lot. And we screw up. And we rely a lot on our technologies and so on and so forth. But ultimately, America, in a general sense, usually self-corrects and realizes when we've made a mistake. And we've that whole American ingenuity, the Yankee ingenuity thing going for us, to where we think of really creative ways to fix the problem in short order. So I think even if all of this were to happen, I think we still land on our feet. I'm not saying it's not going to be a hard fight. I'm not even going to say it's going to be a pleasant walk in the park. But what I am saying is, I do think at the end of the day, if we can maintain our country, we're still there. We're still on top. If that makes any sense, what I'm saying.
It does, but it's making some assumptions. It's assuming that some of that ingenuity hasn't found its way into rivals' hands. You know, and I think that China especially has used their massive espionage capabilities. They have infiltrated a lot of our institutions, and they're getting their hands on classified documents. They have studied the hell out of U.S. military strategy, U.S. military capabilities, U.S. military technology, have copied it, have indoctrinated ways of fighting against it. I think, in the words of a famous Japanese general, I believe the U.S. in a lot of its foreign affairs meddling has awakened a sleeping giant of its own. And I'm not real positive. I'm not real optimistic about the outcome of that if we don't somehow find some sort of diplomatic way to start working through these global issues that threaten us. But I do want to throw this out there one more time for those of you that want to call in. The number to call is 516-387-1733. And if you do wish to come on the air and make a comment or ask a question, once you can hear the radio show in your headset or in your phone, go ahead, pull up your dial pad and press the number 1 to let us know that you want to come on the air and say something. That number again, 516-387-1733, and press the number 1. Once you can hear the show going on there in your phone, that lets us know you got something you want to say. But moving on, I hate it when we get this show into a doom and gloom scenario where we start talking bad about the future.
Here's the odd thing for you though on that. I'm usually the pessimistic one, and I actually do have hope for the country in the future. Like I said before, you know, we have had political violence. You know, I have yet to read any Democrat or Republican in the last 50 years write and say that their opponent is a hermaphrodite. But that actually did happen in elections past. You know, so we have been in really tight spots before, and we managed. I love using that example because nobody believes it happens until they look it up, and it's just amazing to see the light turn on in their eyes. Like, oh, wow, we weren't all happy-go-lucky, friendly people back then, were we? No, not at all. We were the same bastard-coated bastard with bastard feelings then, too. And I'm going to play the part of Jeremy here, and after you gave out that number, if you disagree with us, feel free to call in. We just ask that you be respectful. So... but you wanted to go on with something that was a little less doom and gloom. What do you got?
Well, it's not doom and gloom per se, but I do want to touch on the situation with what appears to be maybe some ongoing indictment issues for DJT, Mr. 45. So obviously we know he was indicted in New York. The belief, of course, is that finding a truly nonpartisan, impartial judge in New York for a bench trial, well, that's not real helpful. So that leaves what? So we go to a jury trial? What are the odds that a jury impaneled by New York City residents, right, overwhelmingly blue city, what are the odds that Donald Trump is going to beat a conviction by a jury of New York Democrats? That's also not looking real good, but just in case New York doesn't get him, I think it was the mayor of Atlanta. Was it the mayor of Atlanta or the, no, I think the attorney general for the state of Georgia has put police on high alert in the state, announcing the possibility of indictments against Donald Trump coming down in the state of Georgia as well. I haven't had enough time to really look into this to see exactly what charges they're pursuing, although I do understand they're along the lines of attempting to what's the word, attempting to interfere with the results of an official election, so, something along those lines. And it all goes back to that phone call that went public with the Secretary of State from Georgia between him and Donald Trump during the whole election catastrophe. And essentially they're arguing that he was trying to coerce or influence a public official to change the outcome of the election unlawfully. And then, of course, over in D.C., on Capitol Hill, there is the ongoing investigation and the possibility of federal charges related to the whole classified documents thing. So it seems like they're kind of coming at DJT with both barrels. I don't know. Well, and if we have any callers out there that would like to weigh in on this, any listeners out there that would like to call in and say something, I'd love to hear your opinion on it. But well, I don't know, Brian, what do you think? I mean, are they really and truly just at this point stacking the deck legally to make it that Trump cannot run in 24?
Well, okay, so here's my obligatory statement. I do not like Donald Trump. I think he is a terrible person. Okay, now that we got that out of the way. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if you look at what's going on, okay, so New York, they indict him on charges that must have a felony involved. And they're like, well, where's the felony? Well, there has to be one, so therefore we're going to follow through this. Well, wait a minute. Why don't you charge him with a felony first? Well, we did. We charged him with these 34 counts, but every one of those charges they've charged him with must have another felony attached to it. It's basically falsifying in order to cover up another crime. But they haven't proven the other crime even happened. So we're already kind of sort of in some weird legal territory at that. Oh, yeah, and by the way, this is also past the statute of limitations. Oh, well, we're just gonna forget that for a second. And then you're talking about the Georgia thing. Anybody who listened to what he said in that phone recording that they clipped the hell out of can tell exactly the context of what he's talking about. He's not saying change the votes. He's saying, can you find the fraudulent votes? Which is a hell of a different thing. I mean, you know, it's a difference of, I know they're cheating, can you find it so that they can't cheat and win versus, hey, let's make sure they can't win. Those are two very radically different different statements. And it seems odd to me that they're doing all of this after he basically said that he was going to run again. I think basically what they were hoping to do is once that he got out of office and completely disgraced of how terrible and horrible his service to our country was, if you could call it that. I'm trying not to be flippant one way or the other. I mean, after all, the man had to rebuild the economy twice in four years. Just keep that in mind. No president has ever had to do that, rebuild the economy twice in 4 years. And I think basically what this is they're trying one of two tactics. Either the process is the punishment, and anybody who's ever dealt with the Alphabet Boys knows exactly what I'm talking about. They basically just wear you down to the point that you just say, fine, I quit, you're right, whatever. I kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. Or they're trying to disgrace him in everybody's view. They're going after those people in the middle. They are, you know, Democrats aren't going to vote for Donald Trump. I mean, come on. Really, AOC is going to vote for Donald Trump? Yeah, right. They're trying to go for the people that are in the middle, the independents, the libertarians, those people. They're trying to make it look like Donald Trump is this terrible, horrible, awful criminal for committing crimes. Well, oddly enough, what they're trying to do is convince the middle that Donald Trump is a horrible person for doing things that the Clintons do on a daily basis. We could prove the Clintons do this on a daily basis.
You bring up a good point there, and this is something that a lot of people don't realize. Our elections, for the most part, are determined by the swing voters. It's determined by the people who, you know, and I hate to say it, but for the most part are probably the least politically informed and are pretty much have their minds made up by whoever gives the best media presentation. And that's a hell of a situation, but you know, you've got people that subscribe to contradictory economic theories, and you have big government people and small government people, and they both are well aware of the political process, how it works, and they just have different ideas on which one they think suits the country best. And that gives you the left and the right, and then you have the people in the middle who really don't know as much about how the political process works. And when I say people in the middle, I'm not talking about like your political moderates per se, because even amongst your, like your libertarians and independents, those people tend to fall, they're either right-leaning or left-leaning as well. And they as well are well familiar with the political process and how it works and just have differing ideals on what's best for everybody. But it really is, it's those, when I say the people in the middle, that's those swing voters that get swayed by a combination of public opinion and media surge. And they're, a lot of them are low information voters, and they just kind of go with whatever the sway of public opinion seems to be, in their niche, within their culture, within their region. And when, you know, when the tide shifts left or right, amongst their circle of people, you know, they go along with it. And so, yeah, there is a lot of battle to, and it, truth be damned, there's a lot of battle to just sway those people one way or the other by whatever means necessary. Whether the information's true or not, it is really a sad state of affairs. But yeah, there is a lot of that going on. But I think the overall goal is this is probably something that in New York, Trump probably will get convicted for. Now that opens up the whole appeals process, of course, right? But the one thing they know is that they can probably get this conviction. They can get it prior to the 24 election. The appeals process will drag out well after the election. Then the one thing that they have to go on is never in history have we had a presidential candidate that was a convicted felon. No matter how bogus the conviction is, no matter the fact that sometime after the election's over, we all know he's going to beat those charges, beat those convictions. It's all about the talking points prior to the election. Now we can label him an insurrectionist and a convicted felon. And that's going to be damaging to swing voters.
Now, while that in and of itself is damaging and it's really destructive for the country, I would like those listeners that are like me, for instance, that I, like I said, obligatory statement, I don't like Donald Trump. I genuinely don't like the guy. I do honestly think that he is probably the second best president that that has been president since I've been alive. But all said and done, I don't like the guy. Why is it important to me that they're railroading this guy? Well, think about it. He is powerful. He has tons of connections. And they are going to convict him on charges that, firstly, should never have been brought against him because it's illegal to bring them against him, and secondly, are past I lost it. The time where they can bring charges. What's that called? Well, any case.
Statute of limitations?
Statute of limitations. Thank you. So like literally, this guy, the crimes they're laying on him are contingent upon another crime that they haven't proved he did. So we already have a problem right there. It's already a no start. And they're past the statute of limitations. If they can do that to him, what is stopping the Alphabet Boys from walking on your door and saying, you are going to do exactly what we want because, well, we know that you fudged your numbers on your taxes. Like, everybody thinks that they're pure and solid, and the government – I always hated it when people said, if you don't have anything to hide, what are you worried about them looking for? Because they can find anything they want. I mean, how many of you that give charitably to organizations and count that as on your taxes, how many of you actually put down the actual amount that you do? Or do you do like I do? And I think it's about this much. That sounds about right. Well, what happens 1 year when they knock on your door and say, we have proof that it's not this much? You have to prove it's not. I mean, if they're going to do it to him, they're going to do it to you. And I'm not trying to say this in a, you know, he's your leader sort of system, but it's more or less, if they can do it to him, an extremely powerful, well-connected, very rich man, then they can do it to you who makes $50,000 a year, and your biggest connection is you know the game warden's first name. They can do it to you, and they will. That's why this is important. I don't care if he's ever president again. Frankly speaking, I don't want him to be. I have other people I think would be better president than him. It's that whole nation of laws or nation of people. I want to live in a nation of laws where I know that I am protected by the law, not the law is used to beat the hell out of me if I step out of line. And I step out of line whenever they say I did. That's why this is important. That's what everybody needs to think about. And just keep this in mind. If we actually do have anybody on the left that's listening, any Democrats, number one, congratulations to listen this long. I'd like you to call in because I really, like, legitimately would like to talk to you. But number two, what are you going to do when the power swings the opposite direction and all of that power you've given to these people to beat the hell out of your political opponents are now in your political opponent's hands? You're
exactly.
going to be the one that's in the target.
That's what people don't think about. And, you know, and so if we do have anybody from the left side of the aisle listening, not necessarily the left side of the aisle, the extreme left. Let's talk about the extreme left side of the aisle. Let's go ahead. Let's put up a hypothetical scenario here. And let's say that we grant the government the power to decide what is information versus misinformation. And let's continue to give the government the power to go ahead and censor whatever their board of misinformation deems as misinformation, right? Let's give them that power. Let's give the government the ability to define what is hate speech and what is not hate speech. And let's give them the power not just to censor for hate speech, but to even impose maybe civil or even criminal penalties, because you'll back that because today you agree with the government's definitions of those things, or at least the party in powers. Now I want you to imagine you've granted the government that power. And then by hook or crook, let's say suddenly the Republicans become masters of ballot harvesting or whatever other shenanigans. And all of a sudden, the Republicans take the majority. Let's say there's a massive shift. Maybe the left goes a little too far left and there's a revolt and everybody, the pendulum swings. Maybe it's 5 years from now, 10 years from now. The pendulum swings and now the right is in power again. And oh, look at all these brand new tools that the left gave them as gifts. Do you really want Ted Cruz to come out and to declare and to get the misinformation board on his side when he says that any pro-choice statements support murder and are therefore hate speech? And therefore, anyone going online making pro-choice comments is guilty of a hate crime. Do you want that? Do you want to give people on the right the power to do everything that you want the people on the left to do right now? It's something to think about. Think about everything that you desire, every tool, every weapon that you want the government to leverage right now against people on the right. Do you want that cannon turned and aimed at you when the political pendulum shifts, which it will. It always does. The left isn't going to be in power forever. Unless, of course, well, even if they take it unlawfully and by force, eventually it'll end. So that is some food for thought for people to think about to back up Brian's statement there. But I'm going to do something that I don't normally do. And I am actually going to be wrapping up the show a little bit early tonight. That's a very unusual thing for me to do. But yeah, I've got it's a busy season right now in the construction business. And so I do have an early start tomorrow. I would like to thank Brian profusely for stepping in tonight to help me out with this show. And I'd like to thank all of our listeners and our callers. And as always, I look forward to the next broadcast. And until the next one, don't stop believing.
I see.